Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we've got, as I said with Randy, we've got striking workers all across the country. Some 22,000, they're saying, 22,000 striking workers who, in places like John Deere, we got 10,000 folks who are out on strike because the offer that they got, that saw increases in their first year raise go from the original 5% up to 10. They got nearly 2.5 times. The 12% over 6 years that was in the first offer, didn't get pensions eliminated for new workers. Lots of good stuff. An $8,500 signing bonus that would more than cover the lost wages that were going on because of this strike. And the workers voted it down. They voted it down because, look, you know, this is an extremely profitable company. This is a they're doing very well, thank you very much. And the workers are like, hey, look, we need our union to fight harder for us. We need to do better. So for me, this is kind of a big deal. This is most certainly kind of a big deal. And here to share some thoughts on, well, the Deere strike that is continuing and others. I've asked Jordan Zakarin to come talk with us. Jordan is a media producer over at More Perfect Union, their website, perfectunion.us. Jordan, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
I'm good. So I'm looking at this John Deere thing going, I thought it was a pretty good deal. The workers are going, we want better.
Yeah, you know, people I spoke to there who are in the union, they kind of felt the same. You know, I think what the people I spoke to said that, you know, it's a pretty good deal. They're worried that maybe the public would turn on them if they didn't take it. And obviously, it wasn't 90-10 the way it was for the first offer. It's 55-45. You know, I think it's been like 35 years since there was a strike, and they figure, well, we've been out here 2 weeks. Maybe we'll see what else we can do. I mean, look, it would take like, they would get like a 25% raise if John Deere gave them like a penny's worth of what it made last year. And so this is a company that was incredibly profitable. And to be honest with you, 10,000 workers on strike, you know, this is not like a small strike. This is the entire company. This is not a place where you can just go, you know, ship the jobs off to Mexico or some other country right away. They tried to have like salary workers go in and build it, build stuff. And it ended up literally going up in flames. And so yeah, if there's one company that can do this, if there's one group of people that can do this right now, I guess it's the John Deere folks.
Yeah, I mean, there are 12 facilities across three, Iowa, Illinois, and Kansas. This is a big deal. And look, in this moment, the workers have the leverage. And look, you know, from what I've been told, this has been years in the making as Deere has cheated them, you know, kind of, you know, slowed their wage growth considerably over the last several years. And this is just people going, we've had enough of it.
Yeah, you know, the offer that they got in 2015, you know, I think they voted on it the day they saw it. You know, a lot of workers are really pissed off about that. And you know, don't underestimate how much the UAW is in trouble right now just with its own members. You know, I think a lot of people are just, there's residual pissed offness, right? Had the UAW not been, let's face it, like somewhat corrupt for so long, and people did not feel as if they were looking out for the best interest, maybe they would take the deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, the deal they got, the first offer that was recommended to them back in early October was, I mean, it was nothing, right? It was very little pay raise, now having like a third tier in terms of retirement, cutting people off from the pensions. It was awful. And so I think that there's a lot of resentment. And so whether or not this was a good, objectively, without context, a good or decent enough contract is, if you weigh everything together, then, you know, why would you say yes to it after you've been pissed off all this time?
Yeah, I mean, there's a history here. And you know, the part that I find really important is that they were defending the unborn. You know, we're seeing a lot of talk about two-tier wage systems now coming back into place. They wanted to take future pensions away from workers who aren't there yet. The fact that they're standing up for the people who are coming behind them, I think, is an important thing.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people we speak to there, they've had family that, I mean, John Deere's been around since the 1890s or something like that. And so they've had generations and generations of people working in these plants, in these towns. You look at Ottumwa, Iowa, a place that, you know, where manufacturing has cratered out. A lot of these places where John Deere is the beating heart, right? There's an East Moline factory 7 miles, I think, from Moline, where the John Deere company is based. And so these people have been there, these families have been there, John Deere's families have been there for a very, very long time. And the idea is, not that you literally pass your job on, but it's a place where families and people and generations can go and work. And we're seeing the same thing with Kellogg's. And Kellogg's just got told, BCTGM, they didn't even recommend a final offer to their members. That's how bad it was from Kellogg's. Kellogg's a little bit different in the sense that they can probably, it's easier for them to outsource jobs. So they've already started to do it.
Right.
But these are people that have been there generations, and Kellogg's, they didn't even want to like open up. They wanted to make the they wanted to entirely seal off the opportunity to become a full-time worker. This is like, even more than what John Deere was trying to do, which is pretty bad. They wanted to just take away that possibility that anyone who started there could then move on to being full-time and getting actual benefits. And so what we're seeing is like this effort, and we saw in the beginning of the 90s and early 2000s this effort to cut off pensions at a lot of unions and a lot of retirement places. A lot of people don't even have 401ks, don't even have that kind of what was supposed to be a backup plan. Now they're just trying to cut that off entirely. And I think that's, really sitting poorly with people.
Yeah, no, finally on the deer thing. Now I understand management. It says there's no more negotiations. I understand, and they're planning on to directly reach out to the members, to make their case on this. Am I missing something? Isn't this kind of against the whole thing? I mean, isn't this a violation on some level?
I mean, yeah, well, hopefully one day when we have if parts of the PRO Act pass the reconciliation, if that ever happens, maybe, this kind of coercion will be illegal. But yeah, I guess maybe they're trying to take advantage of the fact that UAW is a little bit splintered right now. They're trying to take advantage of the fact that, 55%, 50, 45% of people did vote for it. I don't know how well that's going to go over. I think a lot of people are going to say, you know what, I voted for it. People I spoke to said I voted for it, but the majority of my brothers and sisters didn't, so I'm going to stick with them. We saw in Nabisco, we saw it at Frito-Lay, they started having picket line crossers, people started crossing over. But again, this is a long time coming. This is a kind of a much different situation.
Yeah, this is one to watch. The other one for me to watch, Jordan, is what's going on in Ohio. Well, you got 500 steel workers in Shelby,
Yeah.
Ohio, I believe, who what you're hearing coming out of there is the working conditions are something you'd hear from the 19th century. Working 7 days a week, 54-hour weeks plus. People are just tired, worn out. They want a day off. And like I
Yeah.
said, this is, something that is a throwback to like the Lochner era, where I've been saying for a very long time, we have people in our government and on our Supreme Court who want to take us back to the bad old days. If you were hungry enough and desperate enough to work for poverty wages and deplorable conditions, that was your freedom. That was your liberty. And here we
Right.
are looking at this right in the face.
You know what? It's you mentioned the freedom and liberty thing. They always say, you're free to say no to overtime. You're free to not work that shift. Well, that happens. You get points deducted. You get another point. You get another point. You're going to be fired. And so, I was talking to one worker today who's at another company, but is dealing with the same sort of issue. And he said, yeah, you can say that, I'm going to kill like the first 10 people I see who wants to volunteer. I'm going to kill the first 100 people who don't volunteer. Like, you're going to volunteer, so you don't get killed, right? Like, it's pretty coercive, just because they say you volunteer doesn't mean you actually, if your job's on the line, it's not really volunteering.
Yeah, and I talked to a worker at the Kellogg strike, and he said, "Look, we know we're getting it, so our volunteer of overtime is to go. Okay, well, we'll get it at the beginning, so I can get home and get the kids off the bus, or I can do something that needs to be done. So I'm technically volunteering because I know if I don't volunteer, they're going to get me at the end, and then I'm going to miss all the things I need to do. So it really wasn't
Right.
volunteering. It was you're going to do it just differently."
Yeah, they'll schedule it knowing that they have to do it. So they'll see, when can I go in? When can my friend take over for me? When can I do this, 7 a.m. shift or 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. these extra 4 hours, so I can get home and sleep and take my kid to school. So yeah, it's volunteering in the sense that like it's either that. I mean, it's either like eating. I don't know, like it's like eating one poison or the other. You're not really volunteering to choose.
Yeah, it's a, it's death by bullet or by hanging. Choose
Yes.
your choose, you're still getting it, but choose
Yeah,
your
pick your
way.
poison.
Now, look, we're seeing these strikes all over the place. Nurses, 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 man. You've got what? They're burnt out, they're overworked, they're burdened, or the breaking point. And now I'm looking at the possibility of some 35,000 Kaiser Permanente workers about to go on strike. We getting anything on this?
You know what's crazy about Kaiser Permanente is like a lot of big corporations got a lot of PPP money, got a lot of federal bailout, got a lot of money from the government last year during the pandemic. They gave a lot of it back. They said, "Oh, we don't need this." It was like $500 million. They said they didn't need this money. Couldn't spend it on the nurses, I guess. Couldn't spend it on the unionized staff or the engineers or people all across the board working at Kaiser. They said they didn't need it. I guess they didn't think that their workers actually needed that sort of money. What's crazy about Kaiser is that so much of the West Coast gets their healthcare through them, so they have a good reputation, right? Kaiser has like a decent reputation, but that many people working there, when you're that big, you're gonna have a lot of people are gonna be upset when all of a sudden the healthcare stops or the nurses stop or people stop working. And
Yeah.
it's gonna be a big mess,
It's gonna be a
which is
mess,
good.
but this looks to me, Jordan, as Kaiser Permanente telling their employees, we're making you strike because the offer that I'm getting, and correct me if this is wrong, but a 1% raise for 3 years, and they're proposing cutting the pay of new hires by 25%. And I'm going, what happened to that patriotic essential hero label that
Right.
we were slapping on these nurses?
In New York, especially, they'd be clapping for people last year, right? As they were walking, during the height of the pandemic in New York here in March, April, May, June, basically through the summer, they were clapping every night at 7 o'clock for the essential workers. And now they're like, smacking them, get out of here. I know that Kaiser's in California, but it's happening all over. And one nurse I was talking to, interesting point they were making is we don't hear a lot about it, but traveling nurses are often like young nurses, people who don't have necessarily families at home, or people who don't need the benefits as much because for whatever reason. And they work for staffing agencies and hospitals. Instead of having giving good pay and benefits to their staff workers, to their staff nurses, they'll bring in these traveling nurses. And it's basically glorified temp work. You're there for 3 months and you make a lot of money. You make a lot of money, but you don't get benefits. Maybe you get them through the staffing agency, but they're not great. You can't put down roots. You're working crazy hours. And it hurts the patients also. I mean, think about it. If you're a nurse, you got to understand a lot about the hospital you're working in or a lot in the healthcare place you're working,
And a
and
perfect
you don't know the
example of that,
doctors. Yeah.
a perfect example of that is in Buffalo, New York, at the Catholic Hospital, at Mercy Hospital. We interviewed a nurse the other day who said, look, the CEO said that they're paying tens of millions of dollars in extra wages to these temporary nurses. I call them scab nurses because that's what they are. They're crossing a picket line. But they're paying tens of millions of dollars, but they don't have the money to pay the dedicated patriotic essential heroes
Sure.
that got us through the pandemic. They can't do that, and they can't do the safer staffing levels. It's insane to me.
And you wonder, like, what do they think the ultimate end game is? Like, you serve this big community, and what, you're going to take like thousands of people out, you take away their health care? That's what they did. Catholic just Mercy Hospital just did that, showing no mercy. What are they expecting to happen? I mean, look at Pittsburgh, right? It went from a factory town to really in despair, and now the healthcare industry kind of runs that city. What happens if they start locking out nurses, locking out doctors? Like, what, they go back into poverty? The city goes back into ruin? I don't know, especially in a place like Buffalo, what are they expecting to happen? And it's one thing for this to be, big corporations that do this and they make things elsewhere, but you're a hospital, you serve your community, right? You serve the people that you're trying to be honest, you're trying to get payment out of the people who in your community. So if everyone's losing their health insurance, everyone's losing their job. Pay all the money you want to scab nurses, but your community is just going to be unhealthy. It's going to be overrun. You're not going to make money from the insurance companies anymore.
Yeah, I mean it's really crazy. I mean, those nursing jobs are supposed to be the ones that you can't outsource, and yet you've got all these transient scab nurses coming through. And look, I had someone say, "Well, you can't blame them. They're making $160 an hour in some cases." And I'm going, "Yeah, you can, because you're tearing apart the system, and you're not providing the kind of care that nurses who know the environment and know the patients better. You're just not, this is just it's just bad."
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you're in the hospital, you want the best care possible. If you want your family members in the hospital, you want them to have the best care possible. But someone who knows where everything is, who knows all the doctors, who knows their tempers, their how they say things, how to translate what the doctors have to say. Like, you want someone that's been there for a long time and can give you comfort. You don't want someone that's been traveling, living in some hotel, someone who's only there for 3 months, who's kind of not doesn't really care about what's going on. Not that these nurses don't, care, they don't do their job, but like, they're not experts in anything. They kind of bring them in to just be general overall nurses. So it's like having beginners at every single level, people who are new to the place. It's like being in a hotel room, basically.
And finally, I got to get some thoughts on what's going on down in Alabama. The injunction against the picket line. This strike's been going on for months now. What do we know about what's going on down at Warrior Met Coal?
They're locking them out from stopping from striking. It happened, and they were trying to do that in Iowa to the John Deere workers. And this is what happens when the court systems, like you said, going back to the Lochner era, it is not about what happened to freedom of speech, right? I mean, they make it difficult and dangerous for these workers. We saw a worker in Iowa get killed, right, by a passing car. I remember during the Nabisco strike, they were forcing in Portland, forcing. There's an injunction forcing strikers away from workers away from the picket line, away from the factory. And so they're putting these people in danger. They're putting injunctions on them so they can't, speak their minds. They're making things easier for the companies. It's happening in Alabama after all these months. Warrior Met lost a lot of money this quarter, so I guess that's one consolation. But they're putting people literally in danger to protect the factory owners, to protect capital. And that, like you said, is the definition of Lochner.
Yeah, I mean, and at
Lochner
the
era.
end of this, I always say that I don't know any worker who wants to go on strike. It's the last arrow in the quiver. It's the last result. There's nothing else left. And you get these companies who like Mercy Hospital in Buffalo saying we're spending tens of millions of dollars and complaining, but they're not negotiating. They're not coming to the table and making things better. Same thing with the coal company. I don't care if they go out of business at this point because it doesn't seem like they're going to bring those workers back anyway. It seems like they're just trying to break the union and break the conditions for those workers anyway.
Yeah, it's in a lot of ways we're seeing workers sort of fighting an existential war, right? The fact that people walking out of their jobs, people finally going on strike, people finally standing up because they're sick of it. Companies are, corporations, employers are also fighting that war. It's not about what's profitable for them. It's not good a good investment for a Mercy Hospital to spend tens of millions of dollars on traveling nurses. It's not a good investment for Warrior Met to lose $15 million per quarter. It's not a great investment for people across the country to for John Deere not to be able to make things. But what it is they're trying to break the backs, and they do not want to set a precedent. They do not want to allow unions or workers to be able to say, "Hey, look, we got a victory. Hey, look, we got our foot in the door again," because that they know will lead to more and more standards. I mean, they'll have to maybe treat people like humans, and that's really what they care about.
Yeah, they're taking one for the team right now because victorious strikes are contagious. And we could see this explode across the economy, something that I truly believe we desperately need. But Jordan, I appreciate you taking some time. The work you guys do over at More Perfect Union, incredibly important. Keep it up.
All right, thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff, Jordan. I appreciate the time. And seriously, I mean, at the end of the day, I look at what's going down in Alabama, and it's all about breaking the union. It's all about it. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.